Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast. This is another episode of our coverage of the 2022-23 season. I'm your host, Gage, as usual. And today is probably the least prepared I've ever been for an episode of Slapcast because it has been an insanely busy weekend of the magnitude that I have not had in quite some time, probably at the very least since I graduated college. So I don't have any preparation done whatsoever. So the intro is as far as we've gotten. So I'm going to have to lean on my cohorts today who are all full to the brim with knowledge. They're no doubt going to be spitting things on us today. That sounds a little bit violent, actually, but the first of which is here, and that's Reese. Hello, Reese.
Hello.
We've also got Ethan. Hello, Ethan.
I'm sorry to say, but I am not as prepared as you think I am.
Well, no, it was just a clever way for me to get out of my responsibilities on the podcast.
Don't put them on me, brother.
No. Yeah. And Josh is here too. Josh, how are you?
I am sad. I am not prepared either. I am just sad. How are
you?
Well,
this is going to be a shitty podcast, so you all better just stop listening right now. No, it will still be fun. We'll still have plenty to talk about. We did, of course, each watch our respective games, so we will have that at the very least to talk about. I just don't have my usual line of notes, which I generally bring, but today I have not. So it's a sad, sad state of affairs. Josh, I do hope that you prepared a question of the day at the very least.
So for dinner tonight, I made like a one pot lemon chicken pasta. It was okay. It was not as good as
the question.
No.
Wait, yeah, the pot is great.
However, I do like lemon pepper wings, and I would like to know, they're not my favorite, but what are the boys' favorite wing flavor? Doesn't have to be from a specific restaurant, but can be from a specific restaurant.
I'll give you two because I always go half and half on my sauces. I'll actually give you three because it's restaurant specific. So if I'm at Buffalo Wild Wings, which normally I am on Thursdays, I would get one.
Retweet.
Lemon pepper. Actually, lemon pepper is my favorite. I get it.
The sauce. It's important to clarify.
Well, I like the dry rub too. But in both restaurants, I always get lemon pepper as half of it. So I love lemon pepper. At B-Dubs, I get the spicy garlic. It's really good. It's like a mix of
are you talking about the medium buffalo kind of?
Like, yeah, like medium buffalo and obviously not garlic parm, but it's got garlic in it. So like kind of reminiscent. At Wingstop, I always go for the Louisiana rub, which is a dry rub, but it's really tasty. But yeah, lemon pepper is probably my fave because I get it at both places.
Did you not have a third? Didn't you say you had three?
That was three. Lemon pepper, spicy garlic, and Louisiana rub.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I actually struggle with counting, so I don't know why you're surprised by this. I would say mine, as some people may know and Reese alluded to, my friends at Baylor and I began a tradition where I visited Buffalo Wild Wings every Thursday, went to the well for the buy one, get one boneless. And then the other guys kind of started adopting the tradition as well. So it's a great, great activity. But my go-to recently, I've had a bunch of different go-tos. I've tried every flavor on the menu except for the Blazon because I'm not insane. Unlike one of y'all's roommates who just got it casually as a flavor. But I think my absolute favorite has got to be the honey barbecue. You know, I do like spicy wings and I like them to have a little bit of kick. Honey barbecue has no kick at all. It's nice and sweet, but it's just the perfect combination of flavor. Mixes well with the ranch, mixes well with the blue cheese. If you get that, anything, dude, it's really incredible. And then my second honorary mention, which I haven't gotten in a while because it takes a toll on my toilet usually when I get this, and that would be the Thai curry. Which is definitely the most flavorful wing flavor they have there, I think. But you can do some damage with that for sure to your stomach and your innards. So you have to be a little careful with it. But
so I have kind of had a wing journey because it's just progress after progress.
Josh has died.
He's reached Gage level.
I just caught a stray round.
That's crazy.
Now he's reached my level. He's not even on camera.
I'm sorry, that was it was LeBron James, like. Anyway, I've been on a wing jersey. Gage, I'm so sorry. You can
you're fine. That's funny, buddy.
So growing up, I just never really got like seasoned. I was the typical, you know, white guy. And I'll get chicken at like you know, all these Asian places or Mexican food places, but I would not get any seasoning. So when I first went to Wingstop, which was like way later than I should have, I just got regular wings. But fast forward to now, I have become a wing connoisseur, and I love a good season or a good flavor. And so my first like lead into wings was garlic parmesan, which is really good. I still love it a lot. I'll usually get it. I'm also a big fan of spicy garlic, like Reese at Buffalo Wild Wings. But recently I've tried Louisiana Rub at Wingstop, which is really good. And then I tried the Cajun wings, which are a little bit hotter. And those are really good too. So I'm more of a dry rub kind of guy, because then I think it kind of goes well with like the dipping sauce, but I like all kinds of, you know, flavors now. Anyway, that's my journey.
I remember like, because it was our first year living together. We were getting Wingstop and I was like, please get garlic parm. It's just dry rub, but better. Or it's just plain, but better. Like literally there's no difference.
Yeah.
It just tastes better.
Yeah.
And watching you go on this journey has been really influential for me, honestly. I feel like I've grown.
Well, I'm glad.
Welcome to Flavor Town.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, not that I have the desire to ever get them on my own, but I've tried like the hottest wings at Buffalo Wild Wings, and like I'm just not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody.
I'll take my hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I will say,
so it's been a journey.
My favorite at Buffalo Wild Wings is the Thai curry, and it does not destroy my butthole, thankfully.
Well, my diet's just shitty in general, so that might be part of the problem.
You're not alone. That's me too.
I'm going to give an honorable mention to the Buffalo dry seasoning, the dry rub. If as long as you don't suck any down your esophagus, you're fine. But if you suck any of that stuff down, you're going to have a bad day.
I didn't know they had a Buffalo dry rub.
Is that at Buffalo Wild Wings?
Yeah.
Really?
It's good. It's kind of sweet. It's good.
I want to clarify because I said I've tried all the sauces. I meant the sauces. I'm not a dry rubber. I'm a wet winger.
Yeah. That makes sense. My second go-to wing place is Pluckers.
Because I love Pluckers.
Yes, I'm a Plucker.
I've never been.
We need to go.
Really?
So my family and I walked in there, and I kid you not, the wait was 3 hours.
Yeah, they're
the
they're
one packed. The one in Alliance is like,
depending on when you go it's there. Packed and super loud. So, but
yeah. Well, we gotta go then.
Their gochujang sauce is so good.
What is that?
It's my favorite. It's gochujang is like a fermented Korean chili paste, and they just have a nice like
Goku-chan sauce. He's a character in Dragon
Ball. Oh, Goku! Oh,
oh, Goku-chan!
That's really good. I have like a tub of it in my fridge, and I use it when I do like slow cooker chicken. What is it called? Crockpot. Gochujang.
Gochujang.
Like Z, Jesus Christ, gochujang. I can't spell very well.
What does it taste like?
So it's like a really subtle spice, and it's got like a lot of depth of flavor. It's like really unique and kind of fermenty. Like, you know how yeast kind of like smells good?
Kind of just looks like marinara sauce.
No.
I know how yeast smells, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of got like that, like subtly in it because it's fermented. It's good. And then, yeah, those are my like two go-tos. If we go to Wingstop, which I don't really like Wingstop that much anymore because consistently their service is always terrible.
I'm Wingstop out too, but it's just because they raise all their prices.
And the thigh bite stuff.
They got rid of them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I can understand, you know, being frustrated with their service, but I will say I feel like they're always busy. So it's just like mental.
Nah, even the times when they're not busy, they have still been shit.
No, I agree. I think they always take, every time I'm in there, I feel like it takes forever to get my order, like regardless of how many people are in there.
Also, if you work at a Wingstop, I'm not going to take the offense back. I fully imply it. I feel like everyone who works at a Wingstop is a mouth breather and just looks like this is the only job that would take them.
You know, Logic used to work at Wingstop. Logic is a mouth breather, so that goes hand in hand, but still. Yeah.
Speaking of mouth breathers, Chelsea won a game.
Wow, what a segue.
Be careful. Yeah, we got a lot of Chelsea guests on here.
I've been saying we need to get somebody else back on to defend their honor, but seems they've done it themselves. I do know that Reese sent this in the chat that there was some word that if they had failed to win this game, Graham Potter would have been out the door, yeah. Which I don't 100% like disagree with that assessment. So, yeah, I mean, as I stated, I'm pretty unprepared, so I didn't even watch this game, Josh. So thanks for segueing to that. I don't know if you have any comments about it, but
nope, I didn't wake up at 6:30 to watch that game. I just know that they won.
Great. Let's move on. Let's go next. Well, should we go through the train of suffering first, or should we let Reese have a moment first? Well, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Reese make it seem like there's not going to be a train of suffering, and then just like throw it off a cliff back to the future style.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, we were playing Bournemouth, who are as a team are not that great, but defensively were very good in this game. That's what I'll say. And they were tricky, I think is the best word to describe them. They start the game off, literally scored in 9 seconds, but it's the only way I can describe it is they had a training ground set piece prepared for kickoff, which was very interesting. They overloaded the left side, making it look like they were gonna pass back into a long ball, but then they just attacked on the right, which we also kind of overloaded on the right side to compensate, right? Because they've got a lot of players there. They get a cross in. They've got four players in the box right as the game starts. It falls right to Solanke. Boom. Or Philip Billing, that's who it was. Boom, 1-0 in 9 seconds. I was like,
yeah, I thought it was 1 minute. I was like, what?
Yeah, not even. It was 9 seconds.
Did they say anything about it being the quickest goal ever?
It's not. Shane Long scored in 7.3 seconds once. That's the fastest goal in history. That's
great. But yeah, this happened. I'm barely ready to watch this game. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding. We're not going to lose to Bournemouth, surely. At home as well. And then lo and behold, they get another goal later on through a set piece. Because, of course, that's how they're going to score. That's the game plan, right? Sit back and defend the whole game. Try and get a counterattack. Try and get a set piece. They score from the set piece. It was a poor marking from Thomas Partey, I have to say. However, we stuck to our game plan. We ended the game with 80% possession, by the way. 80.1% possession. And just slowly mounted a comeback. Thomas Partey, basically right after he made that mistake in guarding his man, scores just kind of an ugly goal. It was just a bit of graft after a set piece. We took the corner, bounced around a couple times, and then Smith Rowe just kind of headed it forward, and it fell right to Partey. But it's 1-2. And at this point, you know, we've had the ball the whole game. We just got a goal. The fans are loud. Zinchenko and Odegaard are riling everybody up. I'm thinking, I can feel it. You know when you can just feel it? Like, we score the goal. We're...
Yeah, I don't know either.
I'm asking the wrong crowd.
Yeah.
We score the goal, and I'm just thinking, I feel it in my soul we're going to win this game. We get a second soon after that. I talked a couple weeks ago during the Villa game about players stepping up this season. Ben White gets his first goal for us. I don't think it's his first goal in the Prem, but it's his first goal for Arsenal. Assisted by Reece Nelson, which is worth noting. We had a couple of weird things happen in this game. Trossard came off injured in the first half. Smith Rowe came on, but obviously he's been kind of unfit. So the game started getting really, really intense. And so he came off around 70-ish minutes because he's still not fully fit. Reece Nelson comes on, who I'd like to point out, last time he came on was for the injured Bukayo Saka, and he scored 2 goals to win us the game randomly. He comes on, gets an assist pretty much instantly. We keep pushing, and I mean, at this point, it's literally the 98th minute. which to anyone who didn't watch the game, I'm sure there's people like, 98, what the heck? There's only 6 minutes of added time. That's true. But they were time wasting the whole time. Because, I mean, I would too. They're tying against Arsenal, right? But somebody went down. I forget who it was, but they even cut to Arteta because, you know, of course, he's watching the clock as soon as the Bournemouth player hits the ground, and he looks over and confirms there's going to be an additional 2 minutes. He like holds up two and the referee's like, yes. So I guess the 98th, we've worked it into a corner. And even at this point, 2 minutes over the allotted time, I'm still feeling like we're going to score. We're going to score from this. We just have to. Like, there's no way we don't. It falls to Reece Nelson, edge of the box, on his weak foot, goes top bins. I'm running around screaming. I'm losing my mind. And I mean, it's just one of those, like it just, I mean, it's against Bournemouth, but it's like, you just feel it. Like, it's something special happening this season for sure. Like, the mood is fantastic. Of course, it's Reece Nelson. He's the Bukayo Saka before Bukayo Saka, right? He was supposed to be the next big thing, kind of went out on loan, didn't really have a huge success, but yeah, man, I was just so over the moon from this. I watched the goal a million times. I went home for the weekend, or just for Saturday. I saw my dad. My dad didn't catch the end of the game, so we rewatched the end of the game, and I can't stop smiling. I'm watching it. I show it to both my brothers. Yeah, man, I was just so over the moon. And I mean, there was a bit of drama in the game too. I was so happy to win, but like, there was four VAR handball checks against Bournemouth. Two of them, I think, they hit the arm, but the arm is close to the body. Who cares? But the other two, like, I cannot believe they were not penalties. I was a little shocked. I think the commentator said something like, it seems like the only way it will be a handball for Bournemouth is if they pick up the ball and carry it somewhere, because nothing else was getting called. So I would have been really upset if we hadn't at least tied, because we should have had two penalties in the game. But yeah, just absolutely massive to keep the lead at the top to 5 points.
I've never seen a group of people more deflated than I did at the Spurs pub after the final whistle went at Wolves. And then someone stood up about 2 minutes later and said, Arsenal just scored a last minute winner. I literally think I've never seen a group of 30 people want to kill themselves in unison before, but that is what happened.
I can just imagine you ordering like 10 shots.
Well, I thought about it. If it hadn't been 10:30, I think we joked about it. We were like, God, we need like something a little stronger than what we're drinking right now.
Get the moonshine.
God, dude. So, yeah, I had something to point out or to ask about, but I don't know what it is and I don't care. So, shall we move on, Reese, or do you have any other points?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. It was like the main takeaway was just the emotion. Like, it's like this, if we can go on and win the league, this game is like one of the games that we'll look back at, because it's like total, like, the mentality, there's no way this happens a couple seasons ago.
All right. If you are a happy person, you should now leave this podcast, because the rest of us are miserable and are going to find new ways to express that misery on the podcast live for your enjoyment. So I'm just going to go down the list in the order of how they're listed on the Premier League website. So we're going to start with what might be the most soul-crushing thing I've ever seen when looking at the scoreline and the way that it panned out. And that is Aston Villa with a 1-0 victory over Crystal Palace, a comedy own goal, a red card, just as soul crushing as it gets.
This is the jersey from last season. So this is the only time I could reminisce of happiness is last season, because there is none this season. Going into this game, I was thinking, okay, we've had a bunch of these hard games these past few fixtures. We've got Villa, still good, but this is a winnable game. It's actually a must-win game. And I was feeling good Vieira basically got the lineup right instead of one player. Zaha's back from injury. Everything was looking good. We go up 1-0 in like the fourth minute, ended up being overturned for offside, but I was feeling good. I was like, okay, we can put the ball in the back of the net. Zaha's looking good again. That didn't happen. All we did was kind of let the game go on and not try for anything. Anderson ended up scoring an own goal. And I'm thinking, this is going to be 1-0. It's going to end like this, and it's going to be the worst thing of all time. And then we get more progressively in the game, and Doucouré gets sent off, which at the moment he's been my favorite player at Palace, which I think he still is just because of how good he is on most days. But he got sent off for a second yellow. And then by the end of this game, I'm literally sitting there like, this has been my life the past few months. Like, it's not just something that happens like, oh, it's one off occasion and it just happened randomly. This has been happening. We haven't won a game since December. We haven't only scored 4 goals in 3 months. This is a problem. And I know, you know, I shouldn't let football determine how I feel, but I'm so invested in it to where it's affecting my own life. I'm working an internship. I've, you know, met some new people that are in my life. You know, everything's going good. I'm not happy. This club is not making me happy. And I'm like, what is the problem here? So, and I've officially announced on Twitter that I'm officially Vieira out. We've reached the point where, you know, Vieira should have had us better prepared for a game that we could have won. We were not prepared at all. We got beat in every avenue. They pressed us like crazy. Our attack couldn't get going. The midfield battle was terrible because Aston Villa were just dominating us. That's why Doucouré got sent off, because, you know, players like McGinn and Kamara were just bursting through. And Lokonga did good, but Doucouré just couldn't handle it out there. He was getting beat all the time. And he probably could have got sent off in the first half with the amount of fouls he had. So I think there were many things that I thought Vieira could have done. He could have brought on anyone but Mateta, but he didn't. He probably should have subbed out Doucouré before he got sent off. I wasn't inspired by him. And I think, you know, as much as I would have liked it to work better, it's just not working in the moment. And he's talking about, like, I feel like he's giving the same excuse every game. And I'm like, I get that you're dealing with, like, you know, we're just getting Zaha back and we've had tough games to deal with, but we have to be getting something. This cannot be the regular thing going on. Because, like, we have to be able to at least win one of these games, because then we'll be able to get to the period where we have games where we can win, and we won't know what that feels like, because we'll be playing teams that we should be winning, but we haven't won. So it's just a big mess at the moment. I know there's not many managers out there at the moment that probably would be the perfect replacement, but that's just where I am right now.
Is it a Vieira out immediately, or is it a Vieira out once the season's done?
I'm kind of on the immediate bus. Some people might say otherwise. I know I'm not the only one who thinks Vieira out, but I don't know when they're thinking, but we're at a point where he's just not getting the best out of the players. And I think the manager reflect or the players reflect the manager and how they go on, and they just all look lost and they don't know what they're doing. So I've been thinking, I'm like, over the times or the months that we've had under Vieira, like, I'm trying to think about what his tactics are, and I just don't know. Like, I couldn't tell you clearly what they are. So
I'm going to say a name, and I want your reaction. Okay. Frank Lampard.
I mean, it's not the worst thing. We were looking at him earlier before Vieira, but I don't know. This is crazy to say, but I would kind of want someone who, like, it's kind of – this sounds terrible. I would want someone like Roy, who can win these games. I mean, I complained all I want, but he beat Manchester City. He beat, I think he beat Liverpool once in there, but, or I don't know. He was able to beat these teams.
Roy Hodgson in. You heard it here.
Not Roy exactly, but a manager like Roy.
The dawn of Roy Ball.
Let's get
born anew.
Who is the old guy at Newcastle?
Steve
Bruce. Steve Bruce. Steve Bruce.
No, I just think we need someone who has a definitive tactic, even if it's terrible. to be able to go up against these teams and at least get a like a better result. Because we can't go like 3 months without, or like 3 months and four goals. We can't go 3 months without a win. It's just, this is not sustainable. And it's getting to the point where we're being dragged into this relegation battle. I mean, it's been an open one so far, but we have to get higher up in the table.
Let me say another name, and it's not an old guy, but he definitely has a distinct style. And it's Jesse March. Jesse Marsh.
See, I don't know these words. You look at it and you're like, he's been in the Premier League and he's done okay with Leeds, but I would want someone to, I would want to try another bit. Like, because I know he just got sacked and I don't know.
It's not a Jesse Marsh squad, is it?
Yeah. I don't know. Just something about it doesn't seem compatible. So I don't know. That's why I'm saying it's like hard to immediately figure out who would replace Vieira, but like, it just seems like we need something new at this point. So I would be open to anybody, honestly. But I literally had a Joker moment. Like, I literally, like, I had to get ready for work. So I took a shower with, like, classical music playing. And I was just, like, I was deadpanning. And I think Reese was downstairs and I was about to go to work. And if he had brought up football, I would have been, like, shut the hell up. Like I would have been so emo.
No, I know better. Okay, as soon as I heard you coming down, I stopped celebrating and I just kind of sat there and you walked outside and you kind of slammed the door and I was like, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. Because if you had mentioned anything about Arsenal, I'd be like, guess what? I don't care. And then just walked out the door or something like that. So I don't know. A lot of issues, a lot of depression. What's new? No surprises. By Radiohead.
All right. Let's move on to the next depressing episode. And unfortunately, that's me, which is so exciting.
Hi, Gage.
Hi, Ethan. Or hi, everyone. It really is. It's like alcoholism. Being a Spurs fan is like alcoholism. It's like, because, you know, alcohol is something that, you know, you can take in a little bit and it makes you feel kind of nice. You know, you can solve a few of your problems, makes you a little happier. For a while. And then when you consume too much of it, it brings you right back down, leaves you with nothing, leaves you feeling emotionally derelict. And that's what it's like being a Spurs fan. Because let me tell you this, I'm not even going to talk about the team. I don't care. They don't deserve me to talk about them. This week, even though, like, if you look at the results and you look at what's going on and in the greater context of all the years I've been watching Spurs, like, other than when we lost the Champions League final, that's the lowest I've ever felt as a Spurs fan. Right now is a close second. Like, even though we just had two comprehensive victories over West Ham and Chelsea, like, losing in the FA Cup to Sheffield United, who made 8 changes before the game, has just tipped me over the edge. Like, because that was our only realistic shot to win a trophy this season. Because, yeah, we're still in the Champions League, but are you kidding? And then, obviously, we're not going to win the league. So that was our only realistic chance at silverware. And the manager rotates a bunch of players, doesn't start Kane, doesn't start Romero for whatever reason. And then we put down one of the worst performances I've ever seen and bow out of the cup at the round of 16 yet again to a championship team yet again. It's literally a repeat of last season. We went out to Middlesbrough last season. In the round of 16, Norwich the season before that in the round of 16. It's just a never-ending cycle. And Josh, I was talking to Josh about it in midweek. I think we were playing video games and I was saying, like, dude, I'm just soul crushed by us losing that. And he was like, well, at least you can focus on the league. And I'm like, fuck the league. Like, I don't care about the league anymore. Like, yeah, what are we going to do? Finish fourth and go barely scrape through the groups next season in the Champions League and then lose in the round of 16 to some middling team like Milan or RB Leipzig, like the last two times we've been in the Champions League. Like, I don't care about the Champions League anymore, man. I want to win something. I'm so sick and tired of supporting this team and being so on the doorstep of winning stuff and not getting there. Because, like, if you look at the FA Cup this season, it's like Arsenal are out, league leaders are out, Newcastle are out, Liverpool are out. The only two big teams left, Chelsea are out. The only two big teams left in the competition aside from us were City and United. And if there was ever a chance for us to win a trophy in a situation like that, that was it. And we just don't take it seriously because we're not a serious organization. Nothing about the way that we run is serious. It just, nobody makes good decisions. I don't understand how Antonio Conte is still the manager, really. The hilarious thing is he's up for manager of the month right now, and he wasn't even there the entire month.
Yeah.
He wasn't even at the club. So congrats, Antonio. I'm sick of watching us play three at the back and two in midfield. 4-2-3-1 is what Spurs play. If you play anything else, you should be sacked. And I'm just so sick and tired of it, dude. I really am. Like, I'm so glad we rested players against Sheffield United so that we could turn up and lose 1-0 to Wolves. What a great result. We scraped a 1-0 defeat against the almighty Wolves at Molineux, the fortress. Oh my God. I don't even have anything to like. The thing is too, in this Wolves game, like, we hit the bar three times in the first half. So there were chances to win the game, but it just, things don't go our way because they never do. And so I don't really, I mean, it wasn't a great performance, but we definitely had chances to win the game, and Wolves weren't very good. The goal that they scored was a weird, like, odd deflection after a save from Fraser Forster, and Adama Traore does a FIFA animation and it goes off the bar, like bar down and in. Really just a ridiculous goal to concede. So I don't know. We need a new manager. We need a new goalkeeper. We need new center backs. We need new midfielders. Kane's going to leave probably because why wouldn't he? So we need new forwards. We need new owners. We actually don't. I'm Levy in still, but just someone please rescue me from my pit of despair. It's so I'm literally pathetic right now. So I don't have anything else to say, but that's where I'm at pretty much. Everyone out. Conte out. Everyone out. A player's out. Enoch out. Gage out. Everyone out. All right, Josh. I don't know if you're that down bad, but I know it's definitely not a good look to lose to the bottom place team at this
time. Oh, and we lost to Blackburn, who are doing okay in the championship in midweek, which is annoying. It was very frustrating. It was just a frustrating loss. We were the better team. We gave up a penalty in like the 30-something minute because was trying to slide and block the cross. And as he was coming down and his arms were coming down with him, it bounced off his arm. Then Ward saved the penalty. And then like 15 minutes later, Southampton had another counterattack. And Tutar got beat on the turn because he's fucking massive. And just got beat because he's not fast enough. And then a decent finish to beat Ward at the far post. I was like, okay, that's fine. That shouldn't have kept us from winning. Like, we had, I think, 0 shots on target from 9 shots. And 6 of those were from Iheanacho. And he had 5 headers that weren't on target. And he had one shot where, like, the keeper gifted him the ball and he put it over the bar. Like, he literally passed it to him, like, at the edge of the D. And then he didn't drive in at all. And, and then literally just put over the bar. And then we were constantly, like, getting forward and getting forward. And then Sutar, at the last kick of the game, gets a rebound from a corner that gets out and then goes back in. He tries to nod it in. Then the keeper was out of the box because he had, I don't even remember. He tried to catch it, missed, because Sutar's fucking massive, and then hit it off the crossbar. And we lost 1-0. Now we're 2 points from safety, which is not good. And we have Chelsea, who we talked about being awful, but also they had very good players. And it's just a matter of time for them to turn it around. And the really frustrating thing is Pereira, it was back and started for the first time since like last May. And then Christensen is hurt for the next month because of an injury in training. And Harvey Barnes had to be subbed off at halftime because he hurt himself tackling Ward-Prowse and earning himself a yellow. So it's not good. We're not in a great place. Tete's probably have to play on the left, and Madison's probably have to play outside again. But yeah, Iheanacho was awful. I don't know why it took him 70 minutes to get taken off. It should have been like 50 minutes because he was miserable. That's all I have.
All right. Yeah, one thing I wanted to draw attention to, and this is not meant to be at your expense, Josh, but it is true that the relegation battle has really tightened up. Like a couple weeks ago, we were saying we thought we were bang on with who we knew was getting relegated. But now, all within 3 points of bottom, you have Leicester, West Ham, Leeds, Everton, Southampton, and Bournemouth. And then going up from that a little bit on 27, 27, and 26, respectively, you have Palace, Wolves, and Forest. So all the way up to 12th, it's only 2 result swing from bottom to 12th. And as we've seen in the Prem this season, there's a lot of unpredictability down there at the bottom end of the table. So I think I think Ethan kind of alluded to this. I think everyone below Villa right now, which is there in 11th, and they have a 7-point gap down to Palace. I think everyone south of Villa right now should be looking over their shoulder a little bit, because I think there is the possibility for all those teams to get dragged into the relegation fight. And I think this could be one of the closest relegation battles coming down to the wire that we've seen in some time. Because just when you think a team's down and out, they pop up with a random result against a team that they're not expected to beat, and then they're back in the fight. So, I would say nothing is done and dusted there, and that'll be maybe the most interesting battle to keep an eye on this season. So, and let's move on and talk about the real shock result of the weekend, which I don't think anybody had this down. Liverpool putting up a touchdown on Man United.
Which... Yeah, let's start a new section. Welcome to the Man United, our title contenders show. And that's the end of the show.
That's the end of the show. Yeah, I mean, that got dashed pretty quickly. So 3 players had a brace also, which I find to be a little bit incredible. Gakpo, Nunez, and Salah all had a brace in the game, with Firmino capping off the extra goal at the end. I just want to, like, I want to get into the, this is, I'm going to ask this question, and it sounds rhetorical, but it's actually not. I want someone to answer it. Like, how does this happen? Like, actually, how does United go from flying high, winning all these games, 2-3-0, Rashford's the best player in the world, yada, 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 to losing 7-0 to a struggling team who haven't had the best of seasons and just got absolutely power washed by Real Madrid?
How does this happen? I think they have been performing a little above what they should have been, to be honest. I think it's still early days in their rebuild. And I think when you get a lot of players buying into the manager's vision, you can have this kind of quick turnaround bounce. But just as quickly, I think it's really easy to lose the plot because it's still kind of a new project. And then additionally to that, you have Liverpool, who kind of look good again. I mean, it's hard not to look good when you're winning 7-0, but they look good in this game. And you have some history there. I think United lost 4-0 against them last season at Anfield. So, you know, it's like, I think it's just a culmination of all those things. I think they were a little too high, and it wasn't quite meant to be for them.
Oh, sorry, I was going to speak and then had a belch produced. So I think it's interesting because last time this happened, Liverpool won 9-0 against Bournemouth earlier in the season and then turned around and lost the next game. And I think Bournemouth actually won the next game, which maybe was because they had new manager bounce, because Scott Parker actually got sacked off the back of that result, but for a few different reasons. But what I'm really interested to see is if this has implications on the rest of the season for either of these teams. Like, is this a real turnaround for Liverpool, or is it just a flash in the pan? And then for United, are the rails coming off? It's hard to say the rails are coming off after one defeat, but 7-0 looks pretty bad. I mean,
it's destroyed their goal difference.
It has destroyed their goal difference. And also, you have to imagine it's destroyed their confidence a little bit. I mean, I think when you look at that United team on paper, I understand Rashford's playing the best football of his life. Casemiro's a great addition. Bruno Fernandez's class, as he always is. But if you look at some of the names on the team sheet, you wouldn't really expect them to have been on the run that they're on at the moment, given the history of some of these players. Like Fred is someone who's been much maligned in the Man United midfield, right? He's been playing really well, but he's someone that's taken a lot of flack. Weghorst, who we actually praised on last week's show because he's done some great things for them. Is he really Man United quality, though, in the long run? I don't think so, personally. Antony, we've talked plenty about him. Waste of 100 million, pretty much, in my opinion. And then the defense is another issue entirely. But I guess my point in all this is that United maybe are coming back to earth a little bit. And I think Reese alluded to that earlier when he said they've been overperforming their actual capabilities. And maybe that's true, but I also think that United have had a very kind fixture list in recent weeks. I mean, we talked about how they've just been playing a bunch of random teams from the bottom half. And I think maybe now that they, are coming out the back half of that, we're going to start to see what they really look like now. I don't know. So it's an interesting one to keep an eye on. I think most interesting for me is going to be, how do they respond? How do both of these teams respond, actually? Because Liverpool are now 3 points behind Spurs in fifth with a game in hand and superior goal difference. So they, like literally 2 weeks ago, I backed Spurs to finish fourth. Now I actually back Liverpool to finish fourth. I think I find it unlikely that Spurs and Newcastle will be able to keep pace with them for the rest of the season.
It is worth pointing out, Newcastle are still 2 games behind y'all and 1 game behind Liverpool.
That is true, but I also...
only being 1 point behind them.
I also think they really have actually lost steam for real. Yeah. And I don't see them being able to sustain that which they had going from before. I told this to Reese like a long time ago. Even when Spurs were comfortably behind them, I still didn't think Newcastle were going to end the season in the top four. I think we did a rapid fire question with that, actually.
Yeah.
And I was the only one who said no. And I didn't believe it at that point. Just because I kind of think they're this much fake. I think they're a good team, but I think they're this much fake in terms of how good they are. So anyway, Liverpool's next fixture is actually against Bournemouth, funny enough, reflecting back on that 9-0. So that'll be a good one for them to build momentum. Or maybe Bournemouth will pull off the upset. Who knows? And then Man United's next one, they have Batiste actually in the Europa League round of 16 midweek, and then they play Southampton. So again, another team that they could use to build momentum or that could absolutely derail everything if they were to lose. So really, really interesting stuff to keep an eye on for next week. There is one game that has not occurred yet this week. That's Fulham and Brentford, who are two overperformers this season, you might say. They're comfortably in the group that aren't worried whatsoever and are just really trying to achieve the best finish they can. So will be an interesting match to see that the West London, it's not really the West London Derby, but it kind of it's a West London Derby. So I think unless anyone has any overarching thoughts, that will be a good enough place to end the Premier League discussion.
I want to bring up something just because I hate United and I love talking about them losing. This goes out to all the United fans that, you know, were kind of chatting at us and saying, oh, look over your shoulder. We're coming for you, blah, blah, blah. And then even after the Bournemouth game, like, oh, stop celebrating. You beat Bournemouth. Who cares? Have some shame. You're closer to eighth than you are to us. So let's calm down. Anyway.
I wanted to bring up the West Ham game because we literally saw them go from a 4-0 win against, Forest?
Forest, yeah.
Forest to a 4-0 loss against Brighton. And Brighton are a good team, but crazy to score 4 and then concede 4 in 2 different games. So I think
they're also fake.
Brighton?
No, West Ham.
Oh.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, that Forest game was a flash in the pan, in my opinion. No, I think Brighton are very real, unfortunately, Ethan.
I know, my opinion couldn't get any worse.
Yeah. Well, I'm literally in the same. At least your rivals aren't winning the league.
It feels like it.
Yeah.
Because all we want to do is get Europe. It looks like they're going to get Europe. But, yeah, I mean, I think we're all kind of surprised Moyes has lasted this long. When do you think he's going to get sacked?
End of the season?
I don't know. I feel like he just has random what's the word I'm looking, security
credit points. In the bank.
Yeah, he has random credit in the bank from when he like finished top six a couple
well,
years
last
ago.
Season like the last
Is that couple, last season
like, I think they finished seventh last season, didn't they? Or
that's no, hilarious because yeah. It's got to be two. I don't know. I was looking back at my Premier League predictions and I
seventh.
And then they finished seventh last season and sixth the season before that.
Okay, never mind. Never mind. I had some reason I thought I had them way lower, but
no, I think yeah. I think we all had them in the top eight or the top ten at least.
Yeah, but I think I had them the lowest, but yeah, I just don't. I think they're crap. He has random credit saved up so he's not gonna get sacked, but he like has had multiple seasons now where he's like terrible.
I actually think the only way he gets sacked is if they go down. Yeah, I think I if agree. They don't go down, I think he'll still be there next season. Rightly or wrongly, but I just think that's the case.
Oh, I'd love to see them go down.
I would too, and I would love to see Everton go down as well, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. But
I just think they have this like aura about they're too big to go down or whatever.
So, I don't know. Everton were terrible against us.
They were, but then didn't they smash someone in their next fixture? Like
no, they
beat
they won the today.
No, they didn't.
Or
they
no, drew. They tied today.
Yeah. I feel like they absolutely destroyed someone.
That was their next game.
Oh,
we played on Wednesday.
Maybe I don't know what I'm thinking of. Maybe I just was looking at the score when they were 2-1 up and just immediately assigned to my brain that they were winning. But
yeah, they actually blew the lead. They were winning 2-1 and lost.
And then they've got Brentford. Oh my God, their fixture list. They've got Brentford, Chelsea, Spurs, United.
They have Bournemouth on the last day.
Oh, that's crazy. And Wolves right before. That is something.
We have West Ham on the final day.
That could be big too.
I'm gonna see. Forest. Oh wow!
Final day is gonna be crazy.
Teams. Like that's relegation battle, dude. That is actually crazy.
When is the final day?
I'm just going to look now.
I think.
It's May almost a repeat 28th, of last season in the sense that I think last year was the first time that every single team could change league position on the final day.
Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah, so here's the relegation fixtures. So, yeah, Forest have Palace, like Ethan said. Leeds have Spurs, and Southampton have Liverpool. So that's those two kind of – you might kind of draw an X over those a little bit. And then Everton and Bournemouth have each other. And
West Ham have Leicester.
West Ham have Leicester, yeah. Those are the big ones. Those are the big ones. And then Arsenal have Wolves, actually. So – interesting, interesting stuff.
We need to converge for some of those.
We need to what?
We should converge.
Yeah, absolutely. We should
all get together for that.
Absolutely. Got to have like 10 screens going on all at the same time so we can have all the games on.
Outside of Premier League news, if we're done talking about the Prem, CONCACAF routes to Copa America were released. And I can very, 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 very confusing press release on Tuesday. So they're based off the CONCACAF rankings. The first to the fourth have an automatic bid to like a four-team round. And then fifth place through 16th place, which covers like Panama to dog shit.
Are we in the top four? Can we get that information?
Yeah, we're second. I think the rankings come out tomorrow, but because we're still not on top, because I think the CONCACAF rankings are more based on, I think the historic, like how you've done in the past, holds a little bit more precedence than recency. And then 5 through 16 are getting split into two groups of six, and the top two in each group are playing one of the top four. And the winner of that is automatically through to Copa America. The losers get in a random draw, and two will play each other. Then the winner of those two will move on to Copa America. So extremely confusing, but yeah.
Excellent. I am looking forward to that, actually. I think it'll be cool. If fingers crossed, the U.S. qualifies, it will be fun to watch the U.S. and Copa America. I've actually kind of long held the opinion that CONMEBOL and CONCACAF should just do a joint tournament anyway, because there's only 10 teams in CONMEBOL. Actually, it's less. I think it's 8. It is 10. 10 teams in CONMEBOL.
Fun fact, friend of the show, Bobby, saw Lionel Messi score a free kick against the U.S. live last time we were in Copa America.
Yeah. Yeah, just because I think the Gold Cup is kind of a bad competition. There's a lot of bad teams in CONCACAF, which, you know, I mean, it's important for them.
There's a lot of also bad teams in Copa America, though.
But I would say they're not as bad. Like, I think, who's the worst team in CONMEBOL? Bolivia? Like, I think.
Yes, or.
But think, okay, other than Bolivia, think about it. But yeah, okay, Bolivia and Venezuela. But then other than that, it's like Colombia, Peru, Chile, Argentina. Like, they've all been to the World Cup in the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, which I get is because it's a small continent. But like, you think about some of the teams in CONCACAF. I mean, you got like Martinique, Curacao, like. Trinidad and Tobago. Yeah. So there is some draws in CONCACAF, which, you know, is of course just because.
I mean, even like Honduras.
Yeah.
I mean, Honduras,
those places are just smaller and obviously less wealthy and smaller populations. So it makes sense, but still.
I mean, Honduras made the 2014 World Cup. They've made a World Cup more recent as Chile have.
Yeah.
And have done about as good as Chile did in the last World Cup.
Chile's hit the fall off hard since they won Copa America in 2015.
Ever since Vidal has not been as good.
And Vidal Alexis.
Falling off the world and, yeah, Alexis Sanchez.
Who was the goalie they had that played for Barca for a century?
Claudio Bravo.
Yes. I was trying to think of his name the other day and could not think of it.
I have a funny memory of him, like Sam and Bobby trying to convince you of something. Stage. I don't even know if you remember this.
No, they had this like running bit that Claudio Bravo was the best goalkeeper in the world. And I, of course, I mean, you guys know me, especially me in high school. I took everything literally. They were riling me up.
Trying to rile you up. And
they worked because I took everything literally and way too seriously. And I was like, I can't believe you would say that. So basically, yeah, it turned into Ben Shapiro for some reason. But
I vividly remember that for some reason.
Yeah, I didn't, but you just unlocked a memory for me for real. So, all right, fellas, let's get to our weekly segments. Let's start. Actually, I've been starting with Ethan a bunch lately. So let's start with Josh for Jersey of the Week.
I'm wearing an Ireland 2019 Rugby World Cup jersey. It's the only Ireland jersey I have. I'm on the lookout for a Northern Ireland one. But it's cool. It's really comfortable. I like the shade of green it's got on it. And it's got a little like design in the sleeve that you will definitely not be able to see in the camera. But I like it. It's a nice, simple jersey.
And album of the week from Ethan.
So other than having a crisis with Palace, I've been coming to terms lately with the idea of graduation, because I know 3/4 of us are about to graduate. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm gonna do. That's not an insult, that's a fact.
No, I was flipping y'all off because y'all are some suckers.
Oh, okay. I thought it was personal. Anyway, no, I've been thinking about it and just what I'm going to do, and I feel like I have to have it figured out now, but I don't. But so what I ended up doing to think about that was make it worse by watching the movie The Graduate, which talks about graduation and not knowing what you want to do. And if you didn't know, The Graduate soundtrack is made by Simon and Garfunkel. So I've just been listening to Simon and Garfunkel recently. So I got this one, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme. I think it's their, I want to say second or third. It's the third. But it's just, they're good songwriters. And a lot of it makes me reminisce about things going on. And they're just good songwriters. But it definitely keeps me company when I'm thinking about all these things.
Most excellent. All right. I just have one other little piece of information, which is that thank God for the Dallas Stars. Otherwise, my depression would be full and complete. Thankfully, I was at the Stars game yesterday when we absolutely dummied the defending Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche 7-3 to put ourselves back as the top team in the West, which is nice. And then Reese and I are going to be at the game tomorrow against the Flames, which will complete my trifecta of days at the American Airlines Center because I was at the Mavericks game today. So not really on purpose, but I kind of got strung along into going to three games in a row, which is fine. It's been enjoyable. So yeah, thank God for the Dallas Stars. And I would really like if one of my teams would win something. So I really hope that they... the only reason I have hope is because they're not in the East, and the East is like all the teams that are going to make the playoffs in the East could be legitimate cup contenders, and everyone in the West sucks. So yeah,
I'll support one of your teams winning something as long as it's Stars.
The Stars. Yeah, that's fine. I would take the Stars winning a cup right now if it meant 10 more years of no trophies for Spurs. I would actually take that trade. I would take a cup right now for 10 more years of no trophies with Spurs. So, all right. Let's call an end to the episode. Reese, thanks for coming along.
Of course. Thank you for hosting, even though you're depressed.
Yeah. Thanks to Ethan for joining in on the train of suffering.
Yeah. I'd try to be hopeful and be like, you know, we'll get them next week. But I can't say that. It's just going to be more pain these next few weeks.
Yeah. So,
but I'm glad it's not... Actually, I was going to be like, I'm glad it's not just me, but I don't wish the suffering on anybody. So
yeah,
look forward to talking about more misery next week.
And Josh, thanks for coming along.
Thanks for having me. It was good. Oh, it was an awful week for soccer, but I enjoyed the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you to you, the listener. If you've made it through without developing a new mental health problem, then props to you, because you know, that is some feat, but we hope you are all enjoying the Premier League. We hope you all stay safe, stay healthy, and it's a goodbye from us.